This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks. 97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, I think it's wonderful every time Saturday rolls around.
Oh, yes. It's one of those lazy, easy-going Saturdays. You kind of get up a little bit later than usual, kind of get to do some things that you don't normally get time to do during the week, see some people maybe you didn't have a chance to. It's a nice day to catch up and just relax.
It is. And, you know, everybody I know, they do get up later. They go, their wife fixes a big breakfast that they don't get during the week, or they go out to a restaurant for a change on Saturday morning.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or they go to brunch. Now, I don't think they do as much brunch out here as they do in the big cities.
Yeah.
But, you know, brunch is a nice thing. You go and have something that you would never do at home, you know, and then you spend the day doing fun things, you know. You go and look for new fishing lures, or you go look for, you know, for something for your boat. All kinds of nifty things you can do. Or, I know a lot of people have $200,000 shops.
Oh, wow.
You know? Oh, yeah, I know some people that have a $200,000 shop. And, you know, they go out there, they build things, they work, they just have a good time.
Yeah. Start getting their hands dirty.
Yes, and then a lot of people have little sports cars they want to work on, you know, that maybe are 20 years old or 40 years old, and they're rebuilding, doing all these neat things.
I love to see all those restored cars. That's some super talent right there.
It is, real talent. And, you know, there's a show, and I can't remember what Texas channel it is, that shows this guy that restores these cars beautifully, you know, by hand, just every little piece, and puts them back in, you know, a sunshine order. I mean, they're gorgeous when he gets through.
Wow, I bet they are. Wow.
And they sell for quite a bit of money, too.
Oh, yeah,
you know? you know, because of that.
You can restore a car and sell it for a pretty good chunk of money, although I don't know a lot of people that actually sell them. Most of the people that I know that have restored vehicles have kept them for themselves.
That's right. And, you know, you take people like Jay Leno.
Oh.
You know, oh, my gosh. He just keeps buying them, restoring them. And, you know, we don't do as big a deals here in Texas, but, my gosh, it's the same theory.
Yeah, it really
is. And then we talk about the wives. What are they going to do on Saturday? Well, they're just out having a good time, too, you know.
Enjoying some downtime.
Downtime is fun.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to get up and go work. And they go, well, we can go to the beauty shop and spend the day. We can go get a massage. You know, Midland, Texas, every spa is busy every day.
Yeah.
I mean, to get into one of the spas is just almost impossible.
Yeah. People like to relax.
And then the rest of them are going to Ivy Cottage for gifts. That should be their first stop.
That's where all the cool people are going.
The cool people are going to Ivy Cottage to get something nice.
Fantastic. All right, let's give out that phone number.
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And, as y'all know, we're next to Ivy Cottage.
3105 North Big Spring here in Midland. And, of course, the website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. You can go there and see case studies from past investments, see exactly what past investors have made. You can see testimonials to find out, you know, what other people's experience has been like. And they're all positive because it's really a wonderful way. It's not only is it a great experience, but investing in life insurance policies and growing your money is really what you need to do smart in order to retire happy, wealthy, and early.
That's exactly right. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, we were waiting to get this year's policies up. They're up. This year's policies are up on the board. You can go on our website and look them up and see what people have made. You can see what policies, the names of them, how much the policy was, if it came in early or on time. And this week, the up ledger, which we had just done a couple of months ago, matured, $4 million.
You did this a couple months ago? Like how many months ago?
I think we did it in February. I believe we did it in February.
In February, March, April, May. Oh, my
God.
So that's like two or three months?
Yeah, 2 or 3 months, they made 15%.
Oh, wow.
And I had 33 people in that policy.
Really?
33, folks.
And how much was the policy for?
$4 million.
Wow.
Yes, there was two of them. I believe there was $4 million and $500,000. I believe that's right.
That is a pretty good chunk of change for such a short amount of time.
It is a good chunk of change, and everybody, you should have seen the emails I got. And one of my clients sent it, and she said, "This is the third policy this year, Faye." And I know that, and I'm thankful, and they're thankful. So it is wonderful when we have these policies that come in early. Again, this was pancreatic cancer, and you just, you know, every time we've had a pancreatic cancer, they've come in way early.
Mm-hmm.
Because you cannot live. I have never seen anyone yet, anyway, that's lived with a bad pancreatic cancer. And they do come due early. I was not expecting it to come due in 3 months.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I'm thinking 12.
That's pretty aggressive.
Yes, it's very aggressive. And I think it was an 18-month policy.
Wow.
So we had just got everything signed, documents mailed out to everybody, and of course he passed away. So as far as we were concerned, it was really unexpected.
Wow. That's amazing. So what do people do when in a situation like this where a policy comes due early and it matures and all of a sudden people have this money many, many months before they planned on it? What happens? What do they do with that?
Well, they turn around, we redo it again. And it's going to take us 6 to 8 weeks, you know, to get paid on it. But when we get paid, then we're going to turn around and do it again. So in 1 year's time, they're going to make more than what we usually make in 12 months.
Wow, that's amazing.
Because usually we say 1% a month, which would be 12% for a whole year. They've made 15% in 3 months.
That's amazing. That doesn't happen with any old investment. This is particular to investing in life insurance policies, which is very, very different than investing in the stock market.
It's very different. You know, I love it because, you know, we know how much you're going to make up front. But usually we say, you know, it's a 24-month policy, it's a 30-month, or an 18-month. And, you know, we've had two, as you know, in the last 2 months come in real early. You know, the other one a month ago, you know, it was came due in 2 months. They made 15% on that one. And then this one came due and they made 15%. So that's awfully good for, you know, just a very short time.
Yeah.
And let me tell them another thing they need to really watch out for. You know, when they get a divorce, and very few people do, but it happens in some families. When you get that divorce, you have that wife sign off right then on your life insurance policy. Because if they don't, it's a community property state, and years later, 10 years later, they can say, "Oh, you know, I really am going to get half of that when you die." So you need to make sure, I don't care if it's the wife getting the divorce or the husband. If it's the husband's life insurance policy and he gets to keep it, he needs to make sure that the former wife is not going to get any claim on that later, because it'll mess up your estate, it'll mess up your family, and they'll be tied up for years trying to prove that the ex-wife doesn't get any of the money.
Wow. That sounds like it can be complicated. Take care of that right off the bat with just a simple signature.
That's right. You just need her at the divorce to sign a document saying, "I know that I'm not going to get any of your life insurance because we are no longer married. And I relinquish all title, all claim to that life insurance policy."
Wow. What, have you ever had a situation on the back end of, say, something like that happens and somebody is trying to sell their policy and maybe they can't, or things get held up because of a lack of a signature?
Yes. We have one right now. The man wants to sell his policy, but he's got an ex-wife, and we've already got caught in one of those. And so we're telling him, you go to that ex-wife, and you get her to sign off on this, or we can't buy your policy.
Oh, wow.
And he's really ill, and he needs to sell it, but the ex-wife's holding the card because they didn't do it when they got the divorce, and they should have done it. And they do not live in a community property state, but she could still come back and claim, you know, half of it, saying, you know, it was just a misunderstanding and it wasn't settled at the divorce. You have to settle this at the time of the divorce. You've got to have something in writing saying that the ex does not have a right to it. In other words, the new wife might not even get the money. Yeah? I mean, you've changed the beneficiary. But so what? The ex-wife's going to come in and say, it wasn't settled at the time, and I now want half of the death policy.
Oh, wow.
So you've got to take care of these things when the time happens. If you're going to get a divorce, make sure that this happens. If you don't, you're going to get caught, and it'll be tied up in the court for several years.
Wow.
And they decide whether this ex-wife's going to get anything or not.
Yeah. Is there a statute of limitations on something like that, or can somebody come back at any time?
If it's a community property state, then come back 20 years later.
Wow.
They may not get anything, but they can put a cloud on it, and then you can't get your money. Your heirs can't get their money. And so why take the risk? Just get it done when you get the divorce, and that should be part of every divorce in the country.
So even if you don't get anything from it, the ex-spouse could just make it very, very complicated and expensive and just drag this on for years and years.
And you'll end up paying her just to get her out of your hair.
Wow.
Yeah, so you don't want to do that.
That's something I've never thought of before.
Well, everybody in America better think about it. Some guys have had two divorces. If you've got two ex-wives out there, you better get it straightened out, buddy, because let me tell you, they will come in like an old bandy hen, and they're going to be after what you have.
Well, yeah. I mean, money makes people do some crazy things. You know, even when somebody does pass away, there's a lot of times causes family fights. There are feuds. There are disputes. Sometimes people, you really, even close, like brothers and sisters and other siblings, may fight over a will and who's going to get the inheritance, and then the family splits up and they never recover.
No, they never speak to each other again.
Yeah.
One of my oldest clients, you know, died recently, and I'm the trustee of her estate. And, I was going through all the papers and getting ready to disperse all the funds, and I did not remember, but she had a small annuity. And she had said these two nephews, you know, they could have that. And somewhere along the way, she and I had changed it, and I didn't remember her having me change it to one of the charities.
Mm-hmm.
But we had already told those young men they were going to get that money.
Uh-oh.
And then we discovered they're not getting it. And that's kind of embarrassing.
Oh,
you know, and when somebody changes something, they should just tell those people, you know, I'm sorry, but I've made other arrangements. You're not going to be in the will. You're not going to get that money. Because then they always think you've done something, you know, a little underhanded to keep them from getting some money.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't realize the person that wrote this is the one that made the decision.
And they may actually, like, once the policy matures, they may actually legitimately think that they have a claim to some of those funds, and in reality they don't. They just didn't know that something changed.
They weren't close enough to that person to know what the person had done.
Yeah.
You know, when you're not real close to someone, you don't know, you know, what their thoughts are. And they obviously decided they had enough money, that they didn't need it, and they weren't going to give it to them. And so, you know, those things happen, and a lot of times people will contest it. These people did not contest it. They just ask about it.
Yeah.
You know, ask when it was changed. So when did they change it? In other words, when did they decide I should not get this?
You know? Yeah. I mean, And then they probably go back and try to think, okay, what was I doing? Did I cuss them out at that time, or what was happening?
Yeah, was I ugly? Were my children ugly to them? You know, you wonder what happened.
Yeah, sure.
But everybody should do a little estate planning. I have another client, it's a very good client, and he's ill right now. Well, he discovered that his will was old, very old. So, you know, they've done the right thing. In the last 2 weeks, they have had our lawyers do him a new will for the husband and the wife and set it out how they want it done. And, you know, if you've got a will that's 10 or 15 years old, things have probably changed. You know, the person you thought you were going to leave the house to, you know, maybe that's not what you want to do. Or if you have a big ranch, you may have changed your mind and you don't feel the same way. So make all those provisions, bring everything up to date, make sure there's not going to be hard feelings, you know, and put in your will that they're going to get a dollar if they contest it. You know, that's always a good idea.
A little spiteful, and, but okay, good idea.
That's right, a little spiteful. But, you know, everybody should take care of their estate before they die. Don't wait till you die, then everybody's trying to figure it out, and it's old, and it's outdated, and, you know, it's going to cause some problems.
Yeah.
So everybody should have their estate in apple pie order, because anything can happen. You know, this is, you know, we don't have a guarantee that every day is going to be sunshine and roses.
Yeah.
Well, so
it's all part of, you know, financial planning and making sure that not only do you have enough for retirement, but then, you know, sometimes we forget that there's a stage after that that not only affects your immediate family, but other people, maybe from your past, like you say, ex-spouses, or maybe some family that is not necessarily as close as other family members, and then they come forward. And so there's an after phase of that financial planning that happens after a person passes away and they retire.
Well, and some of them, they're going to need a lot of life insurance because maybe they've got three big ranches.
Yeah.
And if you have two or three big ranches, a large estate, there's going to be some taxes due, you know, if it's over $5 million estate. And so, you know, you don't want them to have to sell any of your ranches to pay the taxes. So if you have life insurance, it will cover it.
Yeah.
And everybody should have enough life insurance, you know, to pay the inheritance taxes and whatever taxes are due. And everybody, that's just part of your, you know, planning. And then the other part is making sure you're going to have enough money to retire. And that's where we come in. You know, our investments are in life insurance or annuities. That's the two things we're going to do. We do the life insurance policies, and we do annuities. Some people need annuities. If you can't qualify to do the life insurance policies, an annuity may be what you need. Because annuity, you know, is safe, they're solid, they've been around 145 years. And it'll give you lifetime income you can't outlive. So, you know, for some people, annuity is the right thing. And these are not variable annuities. You can't lose on them. If you buy a variable annuity, it's just like buying mutual funds. You know, you can lose part of your money. So, you know, when people come over, we discuss, okay, first of all, what is your net worth without the house? Do you have $1 million net worth, or do you have at least $200,000 in income? If you do, you know, we're going to do life insurance policies because it'll make you more money. If you don't, then you know, we're going to go a different direction with your assets. And then, of course, the minimum with us is $100,000. And most people, you know, they have either old 401ks they need to roll over, or they have a 401k now that they want to roll over. And it has to be vested. You know, if you've been with this company a year, your new 401k is not vested, I can assure you. A lot of companies invest in 5 or 10 years. And most of those companies, you can roll part of it over, half of it, a third, whatever you want, you know, after that time. Then there's some say, no, unless you leave us or retire or we fire you, you can't have your money. So people have to know all those things. And when people come to us, they usually say, Faye, I have a 401k, I want to roll it over. And we roll that over, and it becomes an IRA. And it's rolled over to, you know, Nevada Trust or Bank of Utah, and then they handle everything. We don't touch people's money. The premiums are all escrowed. A lot of companies don't escrow, and that's how they get in trouble. You have to escrow those premiums, be sure you've got enough to pay it. If it's a 24-month, you want 24 months of escrow. If it's 18 months, you've got to have 18 months of escrow. So people that come see us, you know, we walk them through the whole procedure from the start to the end, you know, that the money goes direct to the bank. The bank handles it from there. All we do is direct the bank. We're going to make this investment. We want this person to put $50,000 in. This one's going to put in $50,000, whatever. And they put that in escrow, and then they pay the owner of the policy. The bank does all that. Then when the person dies and the policy matures, the bank gets the death certificate, sends it to the carrier, and the carrier pays us. So it's just everything is taken care of by banks, not by us. Checks are never written to our company.
So say somebody has a new job, a relatively new job. Obviously, okay. If they've been there for a year and they've started a new 401k, obviously that's not vested. But where's that threshold? How does somebody know if it is or if it isn't?
Well, and here's what you look at. If you've just started a new job, you have an old 401k. You have one from the last job, and you can roll that over if it's from the last job. So that's the way that works. The new 401k, no, you probably can't roll that over because it's brand new. But you can the other, you know. So when people come to us, we look. Okay, do you have two old 401ks or just one? Or do you have an IRA? A lot of people have an IRA that they started. They may have $150,000 in IRA. They may have $300,000 over here in the 401k they want to move. And then a lot of them are starting their own business right now. We've got several people that have come lately and said, look, I'm going to quit my job in the next 2 weeks. I want to take all that money, roll it over, and then I'm going in business for myself. And that's something new that we don't usually have happen. You know, usually they're just changing jobs. They're not going into business for themselves. But we've had several lately that are going in business for themselves.
So then how does that work? What do you typically say? Because I'm sure there's a different path that you take for somebody who works for a separate employer and somebody who works for themselves.
Yes. Now, if they're established, we've got a lot of people that own their own business. We have some people that own mechanic companies, you know, garages, different things. Now, those people, you know, they just have investment accounts. They don't have a 401k because they own the company and they never started one for their employees. So those people are just going to write a check, okay? But the ones that are starting a new business, they've got to roll that from their former employer over to the bank and then start investing from there. Because people like that, you know, they had a 401k, it's going to come over to us, then they're going to take part of that money and start their business.
Okay.
And the rest of it will just start, you know, accumulating for their retirement. And most of those people are not going to retire for 10 years.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of people, it may be quicker. They may be going to retire in 5 years or 7 years. You know, we don't know.
Is there any difference in how you approach this, if somebody, how they set it up? Like if it's an LLC partnership or an S-Corp or like an actual, like a corporation, is there a difference, like when you're starting your own business, is there a different way that you approach each particular aspect?
Well, and a lot of people are doing things with their children. I've got two different families that they set up, an LLC with their children. Said, okay, children, I'm going to put in enough money for you to get you started. I'll put up this much. We'll take out of your money this much. They put it together, and they said, okay, we're going in business together. And as it comes due, they're going to make the children put it back for 4 years. They're not going to let them take anything out of this for 4 years. Then after 4 years, they're going to be on their own. They're going to say, then your investments are up to you. If you mess it up, that's your problem.
Okay, so they get it started for them, and then they'll let them basically take over.
That's right, in 4 or 5 years. And then a lot of people have done things with their elderly parents. They bring them in and say, okay, Mom, Pop, I'm going to do this investment with you. And this is people that, you know, have high net worth. And so they say, okay, we'll do this together, and I'll manage it your part. So they're managing their parents as well as their own investments. And that's pretty neat because at a certain age, you know, we require that somebody besides those parents would have to be on that account with them. Because, you know, if they're 83 years old, we don't want them on an account by themselves.
No.
You know, we want somebody else directing it.
Okay, and then the same goes for children. A lot of times this is like a multi-generational investment plan.
Yes, it is. And, you know, we have people that have trust for their children. And those trusts invest with us because the father or the mother is really the head of that trust. You know, they're all listed. But the father, you know, is the one who is managing that account for those children.
Okay.
So, you know, when people come to us, they're tired of the stock market. They're wanting something solid. You know, they might could make more in one day at the stock market, but then when it goes back down, you know, a week later, it hadn't made that much money. And the last few years, people haven't made a lot. So, you know, if they want to solidify it, if they're tired of the up and down of the stock market, they're going to come to us and say, look, I want to put $300,000 with you or $200,000 and see how it works. And then if they like us and they like the way it works, you know, they're going to put more money with us.
And investing in life insurance policies, we should probably mention this is not a new thing. It's you know, most people think of investing and they invest in the stock market and they take the traditional routes. They don't really either, one, they probably don't know that investing in life insurance is a policy or is an option, or they're just not familiar enough really to ask any questions. So when somebody comes to see you for the first time, they've never invested in a life insurance policy, they don't really know how it works, they kind of have an idea, what are some of the things that people start to ask you when they first come in, when they might make the move from the stock market to something like this?
Well, you know, they're going to want to know how it works. You know, where is the money going to be put? How do they know when they can get in a policy? You know, once they get in a policy, how does that work? And then we have to go and explain to them. Once they're in a policy, the money is tied up. It's not liquid for maybe 24 months, you know, and that it can go over. That's their biggest risk. The policy might go over, and they might have to pay premiums for 2 years or three. But in most cases, they're not having to pay premium. But it does happen, you know. And so they have to know all those things. They have to know that they may have five policies. One of them may go over. Two of them might go over. But then there are going to be some of them that are going to come in early. And that's the nice part. And the ones that come in early, they can reallocate that money several different times. And that's going to help them to retire earlier, like we talk about, and to actually accumulate some wealth. You know, because it's going to take 6 or 7 years, you know, of turning your money all this time in order to double it. And a lot of people do double their money. We've had a lot of people, this has happened. It took several years. But if you've got several times, you know, that it's come in early, you know, this will help.
Okay. Do people want, I'm just guessing here, but I would guess that people who have never invested in life insurance policies probably come in, and I'm guessing one of the first questions they ask is, where do these policies come from that I'm about to invest my money in? You know, have they been commandeered from somebody? Have they been taken from somebody? Where do they come from?
They come from licensed providers who get them from brokers, and the brokers represent the people who own the policy. And these brokers go to these individuals and say, look, I'd like to represent you. I want to sell your policy for you. And they charge them a fee. 5 to 10%, which is ridiculous.
Whoa.
But they do, and the people agree to pay it. They don't know that they could get it done probably for 3%. So they give them this money when the policy closes. So that's why the owner doesn't get as much when we buy his policy, because they've got that broker hanging out that's going to get part of their policy. But remember, these people are sick, and you know when you're very, very sick, sometimes your mind is a little foggy, and you're thinking, I just need to get this sold and get the money.
Yeah.
And because they're ill. You know, we've had, as you know, many times, we'd start to close the policy and the people go to the hospital. Well, the family is going to renege at that point. They're not going to let us have that policy.
So this kind of brings us full circle back to what we were talking about at the beginning, when a policyholder does pass away and the policy matures. This is when, like we were saying earlier, that families really start to battle and really start to argue and fight, and things go into courts, and they get drug out, and people hate each other, and family rifts are caused from this sometimes. So I assume some of the reasons that people sell their policy is to eliminate that.
That's exactly right. Lots of times they want the right people to get the money, and they say, I want to settle it now. I know I'm not going to be here long. And, you know, the Whitworth policy, it was $11 million, you know. And these things happen. And so, you know, they sell us their policy because they don't want to go through this. And it eliminates a lot of problem for them farther down the world. And of course, we did the other, the $20 million policy, and the guy was with the bank. He was with Dutch Bank, and he wanted his kids to get it before he died. He did not want his kids to be trying to settle this and get the money after he passed away. So he sold us the policy. He gave them the cash. So, you know, they had a lot of money long before he died, and he was happy. And most of these people, they just want to settle up. And either if they're really ill and need it for the treatment of the cancer, you know, they may spend half of it, you know, trying to, you know, save their life, which when it's really bad, it's not going to. But everybody has a different reason that they sell their life insurance policy when they're ill. And if it isn't going for medicine and treatment, it's going to the family, and they just want to get it settled.
Yeah, so then everybody stays friends.
Yes, If they're friends now, they'll still be friends.
Yeah.
If they get this settled.
And if they're
a
not
lot
friends.
Of them, you know, we heard of a case the other day. The brother-in-law was going to give the man a new kidney. He desperately needed a kidney. And at the last minute, he would not do the transfer of the kidney.
Really?
Well, now this caused a rift that will never be healed, never be healed. Because the man was ready, they were going to put him in the hospital, get it done, and the brother-in-law says, I've changed my mind.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the man did die, and the brother-in-law did not even come to the funeral.
Oh, wow.
So, oh, yeah, I imagine his sister had told him, don't you even dare show up after, you know, promising him a kidney and not even doing it. If he hadn't promised it, it had been a different story. But when somebody's really ill, and you say, okay, I'm going to give you a kidney. Then you change your mind at the last minute, you know, is what was bad. If it had been, you know, when they first started the conversation, it would have been okay, but he changed his mind, didn't let him have it. So when people are trying to make money, you know, and they're trying to sell their policies, you know, there's all kinds of different reasons that they need to settle it before they die. They cannot wait and settle this life insurance policy later. So that's why they come to us and they come to other people, and we try to make a deal with them, give them as much as we can, and then we try to give our clients as much as we can where they will make enough money that this is a reasonable investment.
So this is beneficial for everybody involved.
It does. It helps everybody. It helps our client. It helps us. You know, it works, and that's what we're interested in, is making it work. And, you know, we check everything in the world that we can check before we buy it. You know, the legal department, you know, checks everything they can. And we try to make sure that this policy is as sound as it can be.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
And, of course, you can always go to the website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com, and gather all kinds of information. See what real people have really made from investing in life insurance policies so that they could retire happy, wealthy, and early. Now, Faye, every Saturday morning around this time, we start getting into trivia, and you always bring interesting things to the table. What are we talking about today?
Something that a lot of people don't even know. Did you know that during the Republic of Texas, we had a Texas Navy?
No, I did not know that.
All right. It was created to protect and defend our coastline, and it offered protection for shipping and trade we desperately needed when we were growing the Republic. It was under the command of Commodore Charles Hawkins. He helped win our independence by preventing a Mexican blockade at the Texas coast. They were seizing dozens of Mexican fishing vessels, sending their cargoes on to the Texas Voluntary Army that we had. During the Texas Revolution, the provisional government, which was in San Felipe de Austin, issued an ordinance, 1835, and that's when they established the official Navy.
Wow.
Then, in January of 1836, our Navy purchased four schooners, the Invisible, the Brutus, the Independence, and the Liberty. And according to Teddy Roosevelt, the Texas Navy succeeded in preventing reinforcement and provisions at their naval base at Matamoros from reaching General Santa Anna. And he was occupying Texas, you know, at this time. And so Santa Anna had to disperse his large army. They were foraging for food and supplies. And this is what led to his defeat at San Jacinto by General Sam Houston. He was outnumbered.
Really?
Yeah. And then in 1837, we'd lost all of our ships. They were sunk by the Mexican Navy, run aground, captured, or sold. So then come along in 1839, and this is in response to Mexico's continued refusal to acknowledge the independence of the Republic of Texas. Our Texas Congress acquired six new vessels. They placed them under the command of Commodore Edwin Moore. He was a lieutenant in the United States Navy, and he left to come to lead the Texas Navy. So again, we have six vessels, and it was known as the Second Texas Navy. So for 3 years, we raided the Mexican coast, kept the Mexican fleet focused on defending its own coastline. In the naval battle of Campeche on May 16, 1843, the Texas Navy sloop of war, Austin and Brig Wharton, we were supported by ships from the rebellious Mexican state of Yucatan. And then that was Republic of Yucatan. We engaged the Mexican Navy vessels, including steamships, the Montezuma, the Guadalupe. This battle is believed to be unique. It's the only occasion in which a sailing warship engaged and fought a war steamer to a draw.
Really?
Yeah, and this battle raged on for several days. But it was a strategic victory for the for our Navy here in Texas. And our Navy operated from 1836 to 1846. And then this is something that I'll bet nobody remembers reading in our history books. I don't remember it. Land grants for military service was called a bounty. And this is a military tradition dating back beyond the Roman Empire. And it was a well-established tradition in American military. So prior to hostilities in Texas during our revolution, the founders of the Republic of Texas said, we're going to bolster recruitment into the armed forces through the inducement of land for military service. They were supposed to get 640 acres free due to serving in our military.
640 acres?
Yes, a lot of land. Wow. Texas passed its first bounty act November 24th, 1835. And they gave it to the regular army and promised those who served in it for 2 years they would get the 640 acres. Well, after the revolution, the Texas government distributed the public lands to veterans. 9 million acres was granted to veterans of the Texas Army or to Confederate soldiers if you were in Texas. Not one of those 10 million acres was granted for naval service.
Really?
Yeah. The Navy was up a hill. Despite the importance of naval actions in the Gulf during the Revolution, the fact remains that Texas could not have won her independence and maintained it without the Navy. And it says that if the United States was Texas's biological parents, then shipping lanes from New Orleans was an umbilical cord and kept the rebellion alive.
Wow.
And the historians have pointed out they had to have the Navy because in Louisiana, you know, you had all that swamp land, you had the big thicket of East Texas, and they couldn't get supplies to us. And everybody knew the importance of Texas Coast to winning a revolution, or squashing a rebellion even. And the posts of Texas are not sustainable without a maritime force. Everybody knew this. And James Fannin, commander, in 1835, he wrote a letter. He said, look, provisions are scarce for the Mexican army on dry land. He requested naval assistance. And he says, where is your navy? He said, the navy ships could block access to the ports. And everybody knew it. But, you know, our governor turned it down every time.
Really?
Yeah, General Sam Houston. They came, Senator James Webb proposed a resolution that would allow bounty land to be granted to Navy veterans on November the 4th, 1841. And in an edition of 1841 of San Augustine paper, that this resolution will meet with much opposition in both houses. After the resolution was finally passed, they gave it to old Sam Houston. He vetoed it again in 1842. So our Navy was never given 1 acre of land. And yet the Army was, and all other veterans, even the ones from the Civil War, if they moved to Texas, they got land. And yet our Navy, you know, did all this great work, blocked all these ships from Mexico, protected our ports, you know, brought our supplies from New Orleans here, and yet they never did receive anything. It's an amazing story of how that worked.
So the Texas Navy contributed all these resources and were such a critical factor in all this, and they got no land whatsoever.
They got no land. Sam Houston, what he says was, you know, these are seafaring people. They wouldn't know what to do with that land. They don't really need it, you know. And he said, if you go to those seaports, there's just harpies there. And the seamen become indebted to them. And they were the only one who would profit by this bounty.
Wow.
Yeah, and he said, oh, they have no interest on shore. People who live at sea would pay no attention to improving the land. Isn't that great?
So he just thought that people who lived at sea were all about the sea and didn't care about stepping on dry land.
That's right. In other words, they don't need any assets. All they need is just, you know, we pay them, they're in our Navy, and that's all they're going to get.
Wow.
And yet the veterans of our Army during the Republic, they were given the land. 9 million acres of land was granted to these other people.
Wow.
But not one little acre to our Navy. And, of course, I didn't even know we had a Navy.
I didn't either.
And there's a lot of books have been written about our Navy and what, you know, what all they did during that time to block and to create a blockade, you know, for us. And the national flag of Texas also served as the official flag of the Texas Navy until we joined the United States in 1846.
So the Texas Navy was around for about 10 years, from 1836 to 46, right?
Yes, it was. 10 years. Now then, after all this happened and, you know, nothing was given, years and years later, they decided to have all these Navy deals in Texas, but it's all for balls and things like that, you know. that's really the importance of it. And it's in Houston, and so it's just, you know, it's an amazing deal that that nothing was ever really done. And I think it was in 1958, Governor Price Daniel reactivated the Texas Navy. He headquartered in Houston, and they held annual balls at the Houston Yacht Club.
Really?
And the governor would review the fleet each year at the San Jacinto Monument.
Wow.
The fleet consisted of every conceivable type of vessel, and the USS Texas serves as the flagship. And it was commissioned by the governor as admirals in the Texas Navy. And it was under the authority of the Texas Secretary of State in 1972. And, of course, it's a nonprofit.
Yeah.
And they finally moved it to Galveston in 1973. And anyone can join who holds a commission as an admiral in the Texas Navy.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It is. But it's just amazing to me how, you know, you fought that hard, did all that good, and when it was abandoned, you know, and we joined the United States, they would have had land and a way to live.
Yeah.
But, oh, no. Our governor didn't think that they needed it.
They were just denied and ignored.
They were denied, ignored, and they fought for our country very gallantly during the Republic of Texas.
Wow. It's just so shocking that they played such a critical role in all this and didn't get, in fact, they were the only ones that didn't get any land.
Yeah, they were not given any land, and yet 9 million acres of land was given out to other people. It's an amazing story.
Wow. I didn't even know that there was a Texas Navy. That's shocking.
A lot of people don't even know that we had our own Navy during the Republic of Texas.
Wow. Well, as always, you enlighten our day with all kinds of Texas facts that some of us knew and some of us didn't.
Yeah, and it just fell on deaf ears, you know. And President Houston ran out the clock. You know?
Wow.
And it was never broached again.
But it's it.
He
it
tabled
does,
it. And it was, yeah.
It goes to show that there's another group of Texans who are tough and smart and play critical roles in the history of our state.
That's exactly right. And you know, we wouldn't have become what we are today if our Navy, you know, those six ships, you know, and the first three ships that did so good, if we hadn't had them.
Yeah.
You know.
They definitely deserve the recognition.
They deserve the recognition, and they deserve the land, which they did not get. But it was amazing to me that there was 9 million acres given away.
And they got none.
They got none. Our governor didn't think they deserved it, and he thought that all they'd have is those harpies on the coast.
Wow.
I mean, I was infuriated about that. I mean, that just infuriates me to think that he didn't know any more about those sailors than that.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's an amazing story, so I thought we'd have that today.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is
877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 right next to Ivy Cottage, and we're right there on Big Spring Street. Do we ever say that? Do we ever say we're on Big Spring?
It's kind of important. You can be at 3105. Guess which road?
Yes, that's right. I mean, we just say 3105 Big Spring Light, you know, instead of saying. You do know Big Spring's a major street, folks.
It is. It's a big one. It's wide.
It's wide, and you know, we've been there a long time, and we have an awful lot of clients and getting more every day, and we're trying to make sure that they're going to retire happy and wealthy and early, if at all possible.
So I'm sure a lot of people are probably thinking to themselves, my goodness, why haven't I done this before? I really need to get out of the stock market. I'm up at night. I'm sick. I'm losing money. I'm just not, you know, getting anywhere. It's time to start making some progress, and it's time to start calling Faye. So what kinds of things should people expect? How many? What have you got for policies? How does the process work? How does somebody get started?
Okay. First of all, they've got to open an account. It doesn't matter if it's an account with your wife, which is a custodial account. If it's an IRA, a traditional IRA, if it's a SEP, a Roth, whatever it is, you bring it forward. We're going to put it in the bank for you. It will be handled by the bank. And then they're going to say, well, how soon can I get in a policy? Well, if it's an IRA you're sending over or a 401k, it may take us 2 or 3 weeks to get it. And then we're going to be ready, we hope, to invest it. You know, we've got a bunch of policies this week. We're putting people in policies all week long. We don't have $10 million today that we need, but we're getting policies in every day. We're bidding on policies. And everybody doesn't realize it takes 2 or 3 weeks to close a policy because all the legal has to be done. The title has to be changed over. There's just a lot of things that have to be done before we can say, okay, we're ready to go.
Yeah. All right, so for somebody who is ready to get going, you've got to at least get started. You've got to at least pick up the phone. You got to make that phone call. One last time, Faye, what's that number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. and they need to bring their papers with them. If it's an IRA, bring it over. If it's 401k, we have to look at that. If it's old annuities that are variable annuities, bring them on and we'll look at them, okay?
Thanks, Faye. Get out there and make some money.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.